Welcome to George Mason University and Antonin Scalia Law School. My name is Henry Butler. I'm the Dean of Scalia Law. It's a real pleasure to have you here today for this conference on competition and consumer protection in the 21st century. George Mason and Antonin Scalia Law School is a particularly appropriate place to be teaming up with the FTC. We have a long and glorious history of antitrust scholars, consumer protection scholars on our faculty. Going back to my first day on the faculty in June of 1986, where Bill Kovacic and I started the same day, we added Tim Muris, Bob Bork, Doug Ginsburg, on and on, Ernie Gellhorn, an incredible group of people over the years. Today we have an incredibly strong group of economists. We have 11 PhD economists on our faculty, as well as several folks with PhDs in finance and accounting. So a very strong business-oriented place. But in addition to that, a great connection with the FTC over the years. Of course, Josh Wright is on our faculty, Tim Muris, I mentioned earlier. Incredible group there. But currently we have Bruce Kobayashi is the head of the Bureau of Economics. James Cooper is over at the Bureau of Consumer Protection working on privacy issues. Bilal is here somewhere. Bilal is one of our mainstays on the adjunct staple and an alum of the school. So it's a long list of connections with the FTC, and it's really great to welcome all of you here for this in-depth probing of the relationship between competition and consumer protection as our economy evolves. So it's with great pleasure that I now turn things over to Commissioner Chopra. Have a great 3 days. I look forward to meeting you.
So thank you all for being here, and I also want to thank our host and all the staff and others who put all of this together. It is a lot of work, and I hope it will pay off big. Last month, the Federal Trade Commission hearings focused on the state of play of competitiveness of the U.S. economy and the application of antitrust law. In this and future hearings, we will focus specifically on platforms and digital marketplaces and the implications of big data, algorithms, and artificial intelligence. As we turn our focus to digital marketplace concerns, I think we should approach this inquiry with three major questions in mind. First, what are digital marketplaces and how do they compare to other marketplaces? Second, what are the role and implications of mass data surveillance in these marketplaces? And third, how do privately established rules and regulations promote or distort the competitive process on these marketplaces? Now, in my view, the FTC's core role, and government more broadly, is to make sure that our markets are working, free of anti-competitive lies and distortions. This role protects two key groups, both buyers and honest sellers. And safeguarding the competitive process is a prerequisite for prosperity. Government has long sought to create laws and regulations that structure and facilitate marketplaces that work. Laws that safeguard an individual's ability to contract and possess property are foundational to functioning markets. This is recognized not only here at home, it's also universal. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights declares that, quote, no one shall be arbitrarily deprived of his property. Now, these foundational laws are supplemented by others that promote free and fair markets. In our country's own history, many cities and towns established public marketplaces for butchers, bakers, farmers, and fishers to sell their products. By bringing together all buyers and sellers in one place, buyers would be able to easily compare products and prices, and sellers could count on a steady stream of customers. Local government could more easily enforce standards for health and safety, weights and measures, and other protections. Buyers would know that their food wasn't spoiled and the scales weren't rigged, protecting the competitive process. Now, in today's economy, digital marketplace platforms carry the potential to facilitate ideas and commerce by bringing together market participants, leveraging the market power of network effects. This is exactly what the internet promised, a dynamic market with low barriers to entry and a level playing field. Digital marketplaces connect buyers and sellers of goods and services. Like the farmers and fishers at the public market, sellers offer their goods and buyers can compare and purchase. Just as cities and towns would facilitate craft markets or spice markets, these digital marketplaces can focus on specific goods and services like books or hotel rooms. Other marketplaces include sellers of all types, including creators of content, news, and works of art, including photography and video. These marketplaces also enforce their own rules and regulations for sellers and creators. Some digital marketplaces focus on individually provided services. Other marketplaces help to facilitate the reduction of economic spoilage by connecting, say, drivers and riders going in the same direction, or households with an extra bedroom or couch with travelers. This has been described as, quote, the sharing economy, though they have since developed into major marketplaces connecting buyers and sellers of fishered labor. These marketplaces also develop and enforce rules and regulations, including ones that set prices and assess trust and character. Now, of course, there are many differences between public marketplaces with butchers and bakers and today's digital marketplaces. The first key distinction relates to data. Now, unlike the family who shopped at the fish market or who tuned into a television program a generation ago, participation in a digital marketplace is not always an anonymous experience where you can browse for free. Marketplaces are monitoring individuals, families, and businesses, harvesting data in ways that we might not recognize or even understand. This goes far beyond what buyers are looking at and can include where they were when they looked at offerings or content, who they were with, and more. For sellers, data about the prices they charge, the way they deliver goods and services, and many other attributes are ingested. Now, this surveillance can include collection of data completely unrelated to what is needed to participate in the marketplace. Devices and appliances in our homes collect sensory data about our daily activities, but how much of this collection is for the functioning of the device, and how much is it purely for monetization or sale? Marketplace operators develop software and algorithms to analyze this data at scale to make inferences about individuals and groups. Machine learning, including Bayesian network and deep learning, aid in the development of artificial intelligence, which helps to mimic the human brain and fully understand the habits, biases, and motivations for buyers and users on a marketplace. The Internet of Things, or IoT, helps to collect even more sensory data from our daily user activities, making artificial intelligence and predictive analytics sharper and more powerful. Now, this cycle of learning offers significant gains to some, but harvesting data is not like mining gold. Those who were the first to collect at scale may have a major advantage. This aggregation and analysis of data has huge value, and the information asymmetry that may be implicated by this raises a number of questions about the competitive landscape. Marketplace operators can monetize the data that has been surveilled in many different ways. The most basic way is targeted ads. A more advanced way is for the marketplace operator to have a financial stake in a seller's offering or to directly compete with sellers of the same product or service. One scholar, Shoshana Zuboff, has described this economic model as, quote, surveillance capitalism. The inferences drawn from the analysis of mass data collection can be stunningly effective. Many of us have surely been in a situation where you have a private conversation about something and later see an ad delivered to you for that product, and many wonder whether their phone is spying on them. But even if your conversations aren't being recorded and analyzed, the analysis of other data collected on us can be just as predictive of what is truly on your mind or even what you have just said. These inferences can even be used to inform individualized pricing. Here is where our existing model of thinking about markets truly breaks down. Whether selling a basket of bread or a basket of bonds, a buyer now needs to think if they are being charged a higher price compared to someone else browsing for that same product. If information is critical to dominate markets and Congress has tasked the FTC to safeguard those markets from unfair methods of competition, we must be sure we understand how marketplaces work, including their structure, their data collection methods, and their business arrangements. And I think several lines of inquiry demand further study, including collection practices. How do marketplace operators collect, store, and secure data? To what extent are participants aware of the extent of what data is being collected? How do operators assemble data on non-participants through the use of, quote, shadow profiles or similar inventories? How frequently do operators mark content to match it to specific devices, as in fingerprinting, for the purposes of data aggregation? Property rights. When a content creator uses a platform to distribute their work, who truly owns this content? When sellers distribute their product or services through a marketplace, who owns data about the transaction? Who has the right to sell or share this data? And perhaps more simply, who owns your online identity? Predictive analytics. What is the range of data that feeds algorithms? What third-party data are combined with other data to draw inferences about marketplace participants? What is the role of machine learning? How do operators safeguard against bias against protected classes under housing, employment, and credit discrimination laws? Monetization. In what ways do operators create economic value from the analysis of data? In what ways can this data be used to engage in exclusionary conduct? How is the data used to develop personalized pricing, and what are the implications of this for competition? The second distinction relates to the regulations or rules imposed by the marketplace operator. Public marketplaces in the United States were typically operated by cities and towns, so regulations were subject to the democratic process, with theoretically the competitive process and the public interest in mind. For example, with bread, there might have been a standardized size for a loaf to help buyers compare and sellers compete. Regulations might have governed the allocation of stalls and safety inspection requirements for meat and produce. Pricing for stalls may have covered the costs of operating the marketplace with subsidies or surpluses coming from or going to the town treasury or to improve the marketplace. Regulations might have also sought to ensure the market maintained popularity and reaped the economic benefits and the virtuous cycle of network effects. Digital marketplaces, of course, are not operated by the public, so the regulations are developed by their owners, usually governed through terms of service. Like the public marketplaces, today's digital marketplace regulations might seek to standardize certain procedures to promote scale and comparison shopping, while also taking steps to ensure that sellers are honest. However, a key difference is that some regulations and rules might seek to serve the private interest of the marketplace operator. For example, their regulations might preference the goods and services on offer where the operator competes with other sellers. Their regulations might also forbid marketplace sellers from offering their goods at a lower price on another marketplace, or require sellers to pay more for premier placement. While some of these private regulations might protect the competitive process, are some of these regulations driven by the profit motive of the marketplace operator in ways that conflict with the competitive process? These are many of the questions we must answer. Additional questions about regulations and restraints include contracting. What role do marketplace operators play in the contracting process between buyers and sellers? Who are the parties? Preferencing. How do marketplace operators show preferential treatment to some sellers over others? What factors do they consider, and what are the implications of this? Maintenance. What steps do operators take that have the effect of deterring the formation of new competing marketplaces? In today's economy, is it even possible to avoid some of these marketplaces? Price controls. In what ways do digital marketplace operators engage in setting or regulating prices for sellers on the market? Now, as my colleague, Commissioner Rebecca Kelly Slaughter, outlined in her remarks before one of last month's hearings, the distinction between consumer protection and competition is becoming blurry when it comes to facets of today's digital economy. I agree with her that it would be a mistake to categorize the questions before us simply using these two labels. We must approach this holistically with the goal of making markets work well for all participants, buyers, sellers, users, and creators. This will require more than just discussion. The FTC derives expertise and learnings from enforcement, but we must also must engage in analytically rigorous examination of data surveillance and monetization techniques, as well as an analytically rigorous assessment of the regulations and restraints imposed by today's digital marketplaces. Without this information about how our digital economy is governed by some of the largest companies and operators, we won't know if markets are working or if they may be breaking down. So I look forward to these next set of hearings to serve as a starting point to deepen our understanding of digital marketplaces and platforms. These marketplaces may not operate like they did in history or how we learned about them in economics textbooks. And if we do not understand them, we are in big trouble. Shedding light on how marketplaces and platforms engage in data collection and analysis, as well as how their rules and regulations promote or impede the competitive process, will be a great contribution to advancing the Federal Trade Commission's mission and developing policy that will make sure our markets are truly working. Thank you.